This is an MUT Radio podcast.
So Gerard is online. He is from industry, and Nolene is academia. So what are they going to talk about? Critical partnerships, industry, academia, collaboration. So in South Africa, I don't know about other parts of the world, we're really struggling as far as commercialization of research outcomes is concerned. So we encourage academia to work together with our industry because we believe academia have got all the answers. There's nothing that they can't do. Am I lying, Mukalus? Academia can do anything. So we are saying, industry, come up with problems from wherever you are, and then academia will find solutions for you. So anything that is done by academia, we are encouraging that it should be something that will have an impact, meaning it should be something that will likely to be commercialized or utilized for the benefit of the countries. So while Nolene is setting up, let me just tell her who she is. She's a Deputy Director of Tech Transfer at Stellenbosch University, responsible for management and commercialization of Stellenbosch University IP through patenting, licensing, and formation of startup companies. With a robust background and years of experience in technology commercialization and IP management, she is dedicated to fostering innovation and facilitating the transfer of university-developed technologies to industry partners. So Stellenbosch University is one of our top universities in the country. They have really done well in ensuring that they commercialize intellectual property through startups and stuff like that. So she's going to tell us all about that in a few moments. Is Martin online, on stage? Is Martin there? Hello, Martin. Gerard. Okay. Gerard is the executive manager at WineTech, where he is responsible for ensuring that this SA wine industry recognizes and uses science and technology as the foundation stones for success in their businesses. He holds a BSc Statistics and Biochemistry from the University of the Western Cape and a National Diploma in Economic Management Analysis from the University of South Africa, and has a master's degree in wine business management from the University of Cape Town's Graduate School of Business. Can we give a round of applause to our two presenters? So while our colleagues are sitting, oh, okay, there we are. Gerard, are you there? Okay, Gerard will join. If he's not there, Nolene will do both presentation. You ready for that?
I'll wing it.
Okay.
As long as y'all don't expect me to be very
clear. Okay, let me warn you then, Nolene. This group is one of those groups. Nolene, you're listening. This group is one of those robust groups. They ask a lot of relevant questions. So they will fire you with a lot of questions. But I know you'll be ready for them. There's nothing that you're not going to be able to answer.
I don't know about that.
Okay. So colleagues, in a few moments, Nolene will start. You can start chatting to somebody next to you.
Sorry about that.
Okay, while we set ourselves up. Yeah, but we're ready for you. Is there any question before anybody starts? Hey, Gerald! How are you, man?
I'm good, and yourself?
Yeah, Mr. Martin Gerard. Welcome. We're very happy to see you. We thought you'd be here physically.
Thank you. Next year.
Okay. I've already introduced you. I've given them your short biography. So, yeah, the colleagues are ready for you. We're just setting up Nolene here. And then you guys, you will do it the way you have planned it. But we are very happy that you have joined us once again today. And, okay.
Harold, can you share the presentation from your side? Maybe we'll have better luck. The presentation.
I'll see if I can share it quickly from my side. Is there a technical problem with it?
Yes.
Okay. I'll see if I can share, Nolene.
I'm joking, colleagues. We will be. Are you winning, Mrs. Gerard?
Innovation. The uniquely human force that drives mankind's progress. Without innovation, your phone wouldn't be smart, there'd be no GPS, no music on the go, and no HD video. Stories without special effects, no colour, no sound. And unable to look inside the human body, doctors would be in the dark. The intellectual property system exists to encourage the innovators and creators who make the world a better place. The World Intellectual Property Organization, a specialized agency of the United Nations, helps them do this every day across the globe. WIPO provides a forum where governments debate and shape intellectual property laws, such as copyright laws, to adapt them to the changing needs of our global digital society. WIPO's goal is to make intellectual property work for everyone. WIPO operates international filing systems that make it easier to protect and promote inventions, brands, and designs across borders. Everyone, from individual inventors and small businesses to the world's biggest companies, can file a single application through WIPO's PCT, Madrid and Hague systems to apply for protection in countries across the world. This saves them time and money. In the last 50 years, WIPO has processed over 4.5 million international patent, trademark and design applications for everything, from machine tools to medicines to solar panels. And when disagreements arise over IP, WIPO provides arbitration and mediation as an alternative to costly court proceedings. WIPO gives people the tools to use IP effectively, helping people in developing countries to make a living from ingenuity and creativity. That means more opportunity and more jobs. Innovation requires information. WIPO provides free access to IP information, including more than 55 million patent documents and more than 25 million records, trademarks, and designs. And WIPO trains tens of thousands of people every year and over 100 years. People of them overseen by WIPO has helped an environment where innovation and creativity flourish. That minds creating new technologies to conquer the world's problems. More music and more ways to listen to it. More art and culture. And more knowledge.
If you go on to a slide.
Creative people can fish. That means more money, creative technology, coffee, coffee, people all over the world, finding new ways to improve our future. What? Why? And the equity system help not.
So I'm from Stellenbosch University, the Technology Transfer Office, and my colleague Gerard, he's from WineCheck, And today we're here, we're going to speak to you about university-industry interaction, which is very, very important in technology transfer. So just, I understand that we have quite a diverse group of people here. There's people from all over Africa. I've also, during lunch, there was someone from the Netherlands here. So welcome, everyone. Are you all enjoying the wonderful KwaZulu-Natal? Who's first time in KwaZulu-Natal? Oh, I hope you'll go and have a nice time. Go to the beach. There's a lot of craft markets around here, so please go and visit. So it's my hometown, KwaZulu-Natal. Born and brought up, but I unfortunately now, or fortunately, live now in the Western Cape, the land of the wine. So has anybody been to the Western Cape? Excellent. Well, for those of you that haven't been to the Western Cape, when you all are around the Western Cape, please come visit us at Stellenbosch University. It's a beautiful part of the country. We also, while I'm still waiting, have you will get my details on my presentation, but we have yearly open week at our university where we invite other universities from around Africa and South Africa to come visit us, and we do a bit of knowledge exchange. So if you're interested, you can pop me an email, and I will contact you when our open week happens next year. So that's pretty much who I am and what I do. While we're waiting, is there any questions you want to ask me before we start with the presentation? Nothing. I can ask myself some questions. So who here is from another African country? Okay, there's quite a few. Who here is from another international country? Just one. And how many of you are in tech transfer? I should ask that. How many of you are in tech transfer? Okay, and the rest of you are in academics. Okay. And your interest in intellectual property, does it come through your research or through your creative work? There's no entrepreneurs, people that have their own business in the room? Well, I hope after I do my talk, it'll encourage more people to start more businesses and create more employment for everyone in Africa. So, yeah. Are we winning? Okay, so while we wait, I am going to talk a little bit about me, the most important topic that I like. So my portfolio at the university is our life science and health science portfolio. And there's really some exciting... Okay. Am I still echoing? Okay, much better. So, yeah, so just to tell you about some of the successes we have at the university, and I'm going to go, oh, there's our presentation. So we can actually start. Gerard, are you ready?
Okay, I think we can move to the next slide, Gerard. Okay, so as most of us here are from Africa, Africa is the youngest continent, and 50% of our population are younger than 20 years old. The current population of Africa is over 1.3 billion. The African population is equivalent to 16.72% of the total world population. And that's a very small percentage of the entire world. And only 42% of 20 to 24-year-olds have a secondary education. So a majority of our young adults do not have a secondary education. Gerard, we can go to the next slide. So if we look towards 2020, 2030. Innovation underpins rising living standards through improved economic productivity, faster private sector development and job creation, as well as improvement in political governance by creating better paying jobs and lowering operational costs. Creating wealth in Africa, informal sectors and outside of the continent's traditional mining and oil sector, this is necessary if African economy wants to diversify. And universities in Africa can play a significant role in supporting entrepreneurs to become economic growth agents in their regions, starting and growing ventures. Next slide, Harold. So Stellenbosch University, that's where I come from. We ranked amongst the top 300 universities in the world. We are the top three in the African continent, and we have over 32,000 students. 33% of our students are postgraduates, and over 4,300 international students from over 100 countries. We are a research-intensive university. We have 10 faculties on 5 campuses. We have over 4,300 staff, of which over 1,000 staff members are in the academic world. And this is very important if we want to drive innovation and commercialization. I'm going to hand you over to Hera.
Thank you, Nolien. So my name is Jörg Morten. I'm from South Africa Wine, a not-for-profit company that looks after the interests of the entire wine industry. And we want to make sure that we provide support services to the wine and brandy sector. And I think it's to help this industry to become more robust, transformed, agile, and competitive. So it's all about the sustainability of the sector. Where I slot in, I look after the research, development, and innovation portfolio. Of course, there's a lot of other activities also happening within the sector, but I'll talk a little bit more in detail about the vision of the business in the next slide and also where we're heading. So I'm just going to go to the next one. So South Africa Wine, the vision is to create a robust, adaptable, and competitive wine and brandy sector. Like I said, I think for us, it's all about how do we transform the sector? How do we make it responsible in terms of the activities along the value chain? How do we create a loyal local customer base? And I'm sure all of you are supporters of our sector. And I think it's quite important to ensure that we grow the local market. And of course, you would need a lot of activities to make sure that it grows. Another important element or one of the strategic outcomes that we want to achieve as South Africa Wine is to create also not just in the local market, but a very established and enviable position in the global market. So with that, of course, growing the sales to our international markets, of which the UK and Europe is probably our biggest markets, but there's also a lot of focus markets and growth markets that we're looking at, China, the US, Africa in particular. I think Nolien has mentioned that. And we see Africa as a growth market as well. And I think at the core of everything that we do, I can't emphasize it enough, sustainability is quite important for us. And with that, the whole environment, as the environmental aspect, the social aspects, the economic aspects, as well as the governance aspects, are quite critical. And I'll show you what are we doing from that perspective. So when it comes to the core elements that we look after to ensure we achieve our strategic outcomes, we need to ensure that we understand our consumers, we understand the market. We do a lot of people development, not just for us as a sector, but also the environment or the people who's working in this. It's quite important to grow the skills base of the sector. Sustainability and innovation, my portfolio is quite critical to help us to achieve our goals. And then, of course, you can't do anything without finance and funding. And again, another important element, and this is also, I think, a core theme for today, how do we partner with institutions like universities, but also with government to achieve our goals. I'm not going to talk about enablers, but I think just the R&D component that I'll highlight within the next couple of slides. So for us, from a research perspective, it's quite important to drive the research development and innovation, but also the knowledge transfer for the sector. We don't do the R&D and the innovation ourselves. We contract that out to universities, and this is where the University of Stellenbosch plays a critical part. And like Nolina said, they are the only university who's got a dedicated viticulture and enology department. Not that we don't work with other universities. We work with a whole host of other universities because we've got a long value chain to service. We work with the University of Pretoria, Cape Town, UWC. We even had some students from Limpopo working with University of Stellenbosch. So we open to work with any university. We also work with CPT as such. And I think for us, it's about the long-term competitiveness and ensuring that our sector becomes more competitive in the long run. So all of us, I'm sure, have looked at and asked a lot of questions to ChatGPT or prompts. My prompt was, how does a modern R&D and innovation system look for agriculture? And it was quite good to see what comes out of that. And as you can see, there's so many elements that plays into a modern R&D system nowadays. If you want to be in agriculture, it's not just about your commodity. It's about understanding from a systemic perspective all of the activities that will play into your sort of approach and into your strategic environment. And I think, again, on top, it's about collaboration. We live in an age of working together where there's multiple stakeholder engagement. You can't just do things on our own. It's all about data. It's all about ensuring that the policies and the regulatory framework support what you want to do. And that is why it's important to work with universities, work with government, work with industry role players to get to your goals. And then, of course, knowledge transfer and capacity building is quite big. And then the whole thing about ethics and the social considerations, you're not working in a vacuum. You work with a lot of people and you need to do things in an ethical and responsible manner. When you come to the climate or the environment, you work with climate. And I think it's quite important to understand how to adapt in a changing climate, have a stronger sustainability focus. Whole thing about innovation, I'm sure we'll talk a lot about that. Can't do it without funding. And then the whole thing about compliance from an environmental, social, and governance perspective, which ties into the sustainability approach. And then, of course, one needs to be agile and responsive. So if you look at this, I think all of us can understand that it's not so easy. It's a complex world that we operate in, but you need to make it work. So in terms of game changers from an industry perspective, from a technology perspective, I think for us it's all about precision agriculture. We see that artificial intelligence is the everything engine. It's the foundation, I think, of a lot of things that's coming, but it can't do and give us the outcomes if the data is not credible. So data will feed the AI systems. I think it's important from a biotechnology perspective, the whole thing about CRISPR. We're doing some stuff with the university on this, but only for research purposes because it's not approved yet in South Africa. And I think there's a lot of advances in genetic engineering that will play into our sector. And if you think about what's coming, I think it's quite exciting for us in the field to get to use these technologies going forward. Then, of course, from a sustainability perspective, regenerative agriculture, everybody's talking about this. We're talking about adaptation in terms of climate, soil health, water, energy, circularity. These are the typical things that plays into our sector, and I think it's quite exciting what is happening in these fields and how it plays into wine and how it plays into agriculture. And I think this is exactly why we need partners like universities to work with. Then also in terms of interdisciplinary research, my saying is always that we're not working just in wine, we're working in agriculture. And we're working with other agricultural commodities that have similar challenges and similar problems. And this is also where we exchange expertise, exchange knowledge, and it feeds into our whole system of innovation. Just quickly then, our portfolio. From our research perspective, we've got a lot of flagship programs. So these are the big ticket items that we want to address, putting a little bit more money and resources behind it. Climate, ESG, breeding is quite a new thing in our space. But pre-breeding, we didn't start with this. I think it was about 5 years, 5 or 6 years ago that we started with this program, using a lot of genetic marker-assisted breeding, boar disease and drought tolerance. Water is quite a big thing, and then authenticity because of all of the MRLs and that playing into a global context. People are trying to keep us out, and we need to make sure that we are using authentic ingredients in the winemaking process. So viticulture, oenology, those are the big things. I'm not going to go into detail about that, but I think cultivation, protection, soil, pest and disease, quality improvements in the cellar, process improvements in the cellar to save cost, and then all about innovation. And I'll talk a little bit about that, how we use blockchain, and again, a whole lot of data integration, because without data, we can't make informed decisions. And then, of course, how do we transfer all of this knowledge to the industry becomes quite critical for us. I think, Nolene, that is my last slide, so I can hand over to you.
Perfect. Thank you. So please feel free to stop me, ask questions as we go along. I know sometimes there's always a question, and don't wait for the end. So this brings me to a very meaningful and very symbiotic partnership that can be created between universities and industry. However, as you will see in the next few slides, this is not so straightforward. University and industry are two entire different worlds. So the characteristic of a great university centers around high quality and relevant teaching and research, which has a positive impact on society. It also not only measures the number of graduates they produce, but they also measure the number of employable graduates. And this is very important in today's economy. Next slide, Kara. So if we look at the characteristic of a great company, Kara, maybe you want to take this one?
Okay. So, yeah, I think for us, what makes you a great company, I think, is a well-conceived plan. All of us know that without a plan, you're actually shooting a lot in the dark. Strong and positive leadership. I think we all understand the value of leadership. We all understand also the value that it brings from an industry perspective, inclusive, and also from a culture perspective. I think it's important for companies that are great to stay focused on their strengths, and also willing to take risk, but calculated risk. And I think, again, coming back to the whole thing about culture, is how you also support and inspire a positive culture and a working and a healthy work environment.
Okay, so when we look at this slide, it is clear that there is a great potential for universities and companies to partner. The synergy is obvious. Universities have intellectual resources and research facilities, which, if combined with the practical experience, financial resource, and employment opportunity from industry, can deliver solutions to many of humankind's challenges. Next slide, please. So let's consider the relationship from the perspective of a university. There are many reasons why universities want to partner with industry. Researchers are always looking for resources for funding their research. So I'm sure many of you here know that. Funding is scarce, so industry engagement can help with that. Industry also poses an ideal opportunity to test the application of your theory. So often you would have this great idea, but you're not sure if it's going to be applicable to anyone. By understanding the specific needs of industry better, universities can align their academic programs and their research to make academia more relevant to society. Working with companies also build capacity and allow researchers to expand their capacity, and it also provides for opportunity for students to find employment after completion of their studies. Next slide, please. Companies are equally interested in partnering with universities to gain access to technologies and expertise, research infrastructure, talent that can be recruited, and enrich cooperative culture and solutions for their problems are always something that industry wants from the university. It makes so much sense for university and industry to work together. However, it is not straightforward. Universities and companies are two different worlds. And next slide, please. Firstly, companies are established to make money. They do this by taking risks, being agile, and for them, time is money. In approaching universities to build relationships, they also often look at the institute as cheap labor to help find solutions to overcome their challenges. So very often, many industry or many companies don't actually have an R&D facility. So coming to a university makes sense for them. On the other hand, universities are driven by research and education. Timing revolves around academic curriculum, and everything is a plan according to the academic cycle, and you as academics would know. So you can imagine the frustration when an industry partner comes to the university with a problem and they want a solution. And there we have our university researcher, very enthusiastic and very excited, but he's thinking about his academic profile, or she's thinking about her academic profile, and part of the academic's profile is to have graduates, so they're thinking that this project could be something towards a master's or PhD. And imagine telling that industry partner that needs that solution now, that we will give you the solution in 2 to 3 years for a master's project and 3 to 5 years for a PhD because, well, we all know in academia those are the realistic timelines. So it is really incredibly difficult for industry to understand the going on of the university and for the universities to understand the needs of industry and to work coherently to overcome that barrier. Also, academic institutes are very risk averse. So no wonder some of them are over 1,000 years old. Does any one of you know of any companies that are over 1,000 years old? No, nobody does. So time is money, and time and money are far less important to a university than industry. So we have to look at ways where we can balance that urgency or the ways to overcome that barrier. Next slide, please. So now let's look a bit deeper into the challenges of creating a symbiotic relationship between university and industry. And let's consider specific pertinent barriers to interaction. The biggest hurdle is often, and everybody knows this, reaching an agreement with the most problematic clauses in the contract, and nearly without exception is the intellectual property and commercialization clauses, as well as arrangements around publication. This stems from significant different cultures and expectation between the two parties. Again, academia, you need to work towards getting your publications done, and industry doesn't necessarily want their competitors to know what they're working on. So that is a huge barrier. So I'm going to quickly, so let me give you an example of this expectation. And this is what I've stole from Andrew Bailey from UCT Technology Transfer that highlights this real big problem. Next slide, please. So if you look at this, industry often think that university have many of these on their shelf. So industry expect university to have a sophisticated product with all the bells and whistles ready for implementation. In reality, this is not true. What we have, next slide please, is merely some or most ingredients. However, there's still a lot that needs to happen to make a useful finished product that industry expects. And often we don't have the necessary tools, next slide please, to help us do this. And next slide please, but sometimes we have a prototype. Unfortunately, no university will, for example, develop a mobile phone. However, we may invent a few features or improve the sound quality or find a way to make the processing power faster. Our prototypes are often unrecognized from a finished product. So I'm not sure how many of you here are in research where you do develop prototypes for industry. But very often they come to us and they want a Ferrari, but we can never produce that Ferrari. We give them a Toyota Corolla instead. So the challenge of commercializing university research outputs. As a researcher or a professor, your job is to make one of something that is cool to you. But to commercialize, you need to make thousands or millions of something. And the practical reality of going from one to 1,000 tends to be underestimated. Whoever wrote the saying clearly understands the problems of commercializing university technology. The university inventions are incredibly early stage. It is not complete and still needs significant development. And it often invented and developed in an environment that is has very little knowledge of the practical mass production. Academic proof of concept often satisfies a research question, but rarely presents itself as tangible products or prototypes with a clear route to market. Next slide, please. As illustrated in our confectionery example, expectations about university invented technologies are not always accurate. There are many more challenges in commercializing university research outputs. So let us touch on a few. An invention is often a result of years and years, or maybe decades of research. This complicates matters to many levels. Another challenge is that the professor often comes up with a wonderful solution to a problem that nobody else cares about. Can you imagine how difficult it is to commercialize something when you have to convince someone that they actually have a problem? That is really, I try to do that often, and it's a huge challenge. Also, researchers are measured on the number of graduates they produce, as well as their publication rates. Their research is optimized for publication and peer reviews, and often grant funding, not for commercial opportunities, and not fit for market. Only a handful of researchers produce marketable inventions. You may feel now a little bit depressed because most of us are from academia, but in the next few slides you will see how this can change. So innovative research output emanating from universities usually require additional development to demonstrate a commercial business case. A business case is key to unlocking investments and market. The most effective way to develop business case is through a continued involvement of the recent graduates who play a vital role in the research. This approach builds an existing momentum for the graduates to ensure that the know-how is not lost, and often the graduate would like to remain involved in the technology commercialization, but there's no opportunity for them within a university, and then they get taken up by industry, find a job, and without that graduate, because the professor is never going to leave their job and help commercialize this technology. So with other graduates, it is difficult. So we need to think of ways on how we can incentivize and treat these graduates so they can continue working on their innovations to commercialization. So one example is at Stellenbosch University, we started the Translational Fellowship Program. So a master's or PhD student working on a project, we provide them with a small little stipend to keep them for a year to continue developing that technology. And while they are developing their technology, we also help them to develop their entrepreneurial skills. We help them to negotiate. We help them to review a legal document. We help them with market access and market opportunities. So we're not only doing technology development with them, we are also doing entrepreneurship development. And that is a huge need in our economy. So now more than ever before, universities find themselves in financial difficulties and look for more hopeful ways to engage with industry and for funding opportunities. The university typically has five streams of income. The first stream would be state funding, which we all know is dwindling. The second is student fees, and in South Africa, the people will know, with fees must fall. It is clear that universities cannot make this a sustainable stream of income. The third stream of income is through contract research, and yes, this often involves industry. The fourth stream of income is from donor funding. And the fifth stream of income, that's often lumped with the third stream of income, contract research, is from commercialization. So here is a word, commercialization, that brings us much closer to what industry wants. Next slide, please. So there's now a new emphasis on the importance of intellectual property. And in addition to the finance needs of a research institute, the Intellectual Property Rights Act, promulgated in 2010, placed a far more important role of intellectual property in developing institutes. The Act requires public-funded research institute to establish a technology transfer office, like my office, to transfer their research outputs from a university to reach society, and often this means university engagement. And this office, the Technology Transfer Office, is instrumental in helping with this commercialization. Next slide, please. There are a number of ways to commercialize university research and teaching. The research itself generates income from the university. Academic staff can generate further income from the institute and for the institute and themselves through consulting to industry. So consulting is very interesting to me because it's different from doing research. You already have knowledge, and you are just transferring that knowledge. You are not creating new knowledge. Then there's research collaborations, and where parties jointly create new knowledge. And the other interesting model is short courses. So this is different from the formal academic program. It's very specific to industry needs. For example, medical profession, doctors require CPD points to keep their accreditation. So universities often offer these short courses where it is an alternate stream of income that can be used. And then, specifically for this audience, is licensing of the intellectual property or patented intellectual property to industry. And here it is interesting because you are giving the company the right to use your intellectual property, but without ownership. So the university still retains ownership and allows the company rights, and there we have a royalty income that can be used for further development. And then There is the option of assignment or selling the IP to an industry partner as well. So there is several options that one can look at when engaging with industry. Next slide, please. So just to give you an example of some of the agreements that we use as a technology transfer office to transfer university research to industry. So one of the most common ones is non-disclosure agreements. And this is usually to share information. Always remember, a non-disclosure agreement only allows you to share information. You should not be sharing anything else. You should not be giving them a prototype to test. You should not be giving them access to technology. It's just information sharing. Research collaboration agreements is also very popular between industry and universities. Here, it has to be very clearly defined on the intellectual property, background IP, foreground IP, joint IP. Collaboration agreements are also very, very popular. And also, when we do collaboration agreement, intellectual property has to be carefully thought. Who's going to own the intellectual property? How are we going to manage that intellectual property? We can't have two parties leading a collaboration. Who's going to be the lead collaborator? So these are very important factors that you have to consider when working with agreements. Material transfer agreements are very popular, especially in institutes that are very heavy in the sciences. So to share any data, to share any samples, you'll need a material transfer agreement. But that also clearly defines what the industry partner can do with your material. So you have to be very careful in how you draft your material transfer agreements. Bursary agreements, usually industry will have access to talent. They will fund a student bursary. There's no rights to the intellectual property. The university still owns all the rights to that intellectual property from a bursary contract. And then if we look at licensing, an evaluation license gives industry the right to evaluate the technology, but on a research level. They cannot do anything commercial with that technology under an evaluation license. Then an instant access license, something that we use often. And here, we've developed the research. We have it at a scale where industry can now take it and test it commercially. So if we've made a fan belt for a motor vehicle, now you want to test it in the motor vehicle and see if it will be better than the current fan belts. This instant access license allows industry to use the technology commercially. They can sell. They can test the market. So it's a very, very nice way of also bridging the gap between industry and research. Then there's manufacturing licenses, exclusive, non-exclusive licenses, and end-user license agreement that usually deals with software. So engaging with industry and building networks are very important. It is a contact sport. As a university personnel, it's very difficult for us to get out of our comfort zone, but please go out there, speak to industry, build a network, communicate with your peers, attend conferences, attend events like this, and use it as a network opportunity. So marketing material is very important. Please use clear marketing materials when you engage with industry. All the technical jargon needs to go out, because often you're not dealing with a technical person, and they are not interested in what you want to say technically. I'm going to give you an example of technologies from our office. Sorry, Karen. We have to go to engage with industry and getting the message right. Slides. I just got nervous because I got a timer, and I forgot to tell you to skip the slides. So I'm going to just say, you know, I'm going to use examples of some technologies from our university where we start to market and the stuff. So there's titles of marketing material: canine tarsal anthropoid disc plates, cyclopeptide derived antimicrobial composition and use thereof. composite electrolytes containing surface modification, silica, indole-based non-nucleotide reverse transcription inhibitors for the treatment of HIV. Anybody knows what that is. But I'm sure you know a method to treat Alzheimer's disease. Lactose removal from milk. Prevention of online piracy of digital content. So the type of message you give needs to be very clear. So I'm going to skip some slides and go to the interesting part. So, Gerard, if we can go to the solution creating a knowledge region slide. So the role of the universities are ever-evolving. Next slide, please. So initially, thousands of years ago, a university was for teaching, and the result was to create graduates. Then it evolved to teaching and research. So we were creating graduates and doing research to create publications. Then we introduced innovation. We are creating graduates that is attracted to industry. We are creating research that results in publications. We are creating research that creates intellectual property. And this creation of intellectual property leads to development of entrepreneurs. And this all-incumbent effect leads to a knowledge region. Next slide, please. So what typically a knowledge region is, you have a university. You create a critical mass of spin-out companies. These spin-out companies attract entrepreneurs. These entrepreneurs attract VC and angel investors. And these angel investors and VCs attract multinational. In that way, you are creating a knowledge region of various different parties in the area. And that's what we've created at Stellenbosch University. So, next slide, please. Leuven is an example of an old town where the university worked with local government and industry to build five science parks in just 10 years. Next slide, please. So, the University of Cambridge, University of California, Stanford University, Imperial College of London, and the University of Oxford all have done this. Next slide, please. And that brings us to Stellenbosch University and our launch lab, our business incubator. So, next slide, please. So, we finally at Stellenbosch managed to develop our business incubator in 2013 on campus. We were put into a small little office in Admin A, which is our admin building where you go for student registration. And at the launch event, a bank offered us funding to establish a much larger facility. So in 2015, we established the bigger version of the launch lab, what it is today. And with funding from the bank, government, and industry, we have now established a well-oiled, as I would say, business incubator. The launch lab provides incubation services to our university research entrepreneurs, but it also offers services to student entrepreneurs. It also provides an environment for industry engagement, and it offers support to the local startup community within the Stellenbosch region. So, through the next slide, please. Through the launch lab, Stellenbosch University had widened its access to support entrepreneurs significantly, and we broke down the barriers of working with entrepreneurs, and to a degree also with industry. It has also created an interest in entrepreneurship and spin-out companies, and we will see a sharp increase in our spin-out company activities in the next slide. Next slide, please. So, if you look at the next slide, you will see in that round circle. So, we started our launch lab 2015, and once we started our launch lab, our university group of companies had doubled or tripled. So, having that support to drive university innovation, to commercialize university innovation, was really important. We have 32 spin-out companies currently. And they range from life sciences, engineering, software. We even have a mall and a gym. That's part of our spin-out companies. Over to you, Hera.
Thanks, Nolene. Okay, so I think it's important from an industry perspective to showcase that our science is helping us to achieve or get solutions for our problems. As you know, problems nowadays is highly complex, and fundamental and applied research is actually helping us to get solutions for some of these problems, and these are just examples of the stuff that we're doing with the universities. It's quite also important to show that this can go into new knowledge for industry. So Pharma Days is quite important for us to showcase to what universities are doing. And we actually would like, Nolina said, that we're bringing industry closer to academia so that academia can understand the problems more clearly, but also for industry to understand how academia actually solve these problems. And I think it's a nice symbiotic relationship that we're trying to create. So in terms of how do we bring innovation into the sector, as the industry body, we were investing quite a lot of money into the R&D or at universities. And maybe 6-7 years ago, we saw that there's actually more stuff coming out rather than just a student who's graduated or an article or a thesis or an article in a publication. And we actually saw a lot of potential products or services that could add value into the sector. And for that reason, we then said, let's explore a little bit the potential of how this R&D that we're funding can create or give commercial application and commercial solutions to the industry. And I think one of the things that we felt strongly about was that if you have a great idea, it has no value if it has no uptake by the industry. And this is something that we felt strongly about, that we need to make sure that if you might have the best solution out there, but if no one is willing to pay for it, it doesn't really mean it will make commercial value or commercial growth as such, or commercial growth for you as a business as well. And then we said, let's try and create an opportunity. How do we take ideas to value by almost doing a little bit of an experimentation project, which we call the scoping study. We identified or developed from the business model canvas our own sort of lean canvas. And this was to take all of the ideas that came either from a research organization or from the private sector or from the universities and see if we can maybe see if there's uptake in industry or in other case, value for it when somebody wants to pay for it. And then we actually said, but let's go a little bit further and see if there's not other people who's trying, who wants to invest in this, and either in early stage investment like venture capital or seed capital, or maybe also how we can get companies to support and build the ventures from students who actually want to commercialize their products and venture into the business itself. So from an innovation context, we saw that there was quite a lot of technologies that played into our world. A lot of R&D now has a lot of sensors and development of low-cost sensors, the whole thing about genetics and biotechnology, but also in terms of viticulture, in terms of precision viticulture and remote sensing. So for us, it's all about turning data into wisdom. And by doing this, we want to ensure that our producers and the farmers and also all the businesses in the value chain becomes much more sustainable and profitable. And if you think about the use cases for these technologies, there are so many. And I think it's quite important to highlight that we've got a couple of focus areas, like I've mentioned, climate, water, the whole thing about authenticity and breeding. Other things that is
Gerard, we are losing you. We can't hear you.
Invested in an R&D project, create a lot for yourself. Can you hear me now?
Yes, yes, better. Thank you.
Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so maybe just in terms of a case study on our side, TerraClim is a company that we supported with R&D funding, actually a PhD student by the name of Dr. Tara Southey. We supported Tara with her PhD studies, and then coming out of a PhD study, we actually felt that there could be lots more value in what Tara developed. We then went back to industry and asked industry, but what is critical for you from a climate resilience perspective? What are the gaps, taking into account the outcomes that has come from Tara's work? We then, with industry, developed another study where Tara went on to do a postdoc, where she built climate databases and developed an extensive weather station network with third parties, and out of that actually developed a climate database, but also a decision support tool for farmers. Then Tara decided she wants to now venture into a business. She's still in academia, but she felt that the business world was calling her, and I think this is actually one of the examples showing that people from academia moving into business, and how do we support them and how do we help them as an industry. So Tara then took an idea and she went and created value from that idea for the industry. So what is Tara doing for industry? Actually develop a whole product for them in terms of a climate database, but also understanding where does this actually will bring value from a business model perspective was actually where she developed a suitability tool. The questions that were coming to Tara was, where do we plant what in a changing climate? And with that, we developed actually a suitability tool that can help farmers now to make better improved decisions. The model is not, it's still in design and development, but we've actually got a lot of test cases that makes a lot of sense and creates a lot of value for the industry. And this is exactly what we saw with other examples within the university, and Tara is actually leading the way with us.
We're going to have to wrap up now.
Coming up.
We've run out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up.
Sorry. Where do you want to go, Nalin? Do you want to maybe take a couple of slides further down?
I think we can just conclude and maybe just go to our in the crystal ball slide. So, with everything that we have said now, and I'm sorry we ran out of time, but it's not easy commercializing university intellectual property. And the most effective way we can do it is working with other research institutes and working with industry. So bringing all those parties together is critical. And I think engaging more with everyone at events like this, inviting more industry to events like this, will help us grow greatly. But also consider several factors on how we communicate our research to industry and how we communicate our research to our peers. So start looking at those aspects, and hopefully one of these days we'll move towards getting a bigger and better industry engagement. That's us. If you could just put our contact details up, Gerard, and then if you'll need to contact us for any information, please feel free to reach out to both of us.
Thank you very much. Can we clap for Nolin and Gerard? Nolin and Gerard, we sorry, guys, because technology failed us this afternoon. Everything has been going well, so we really apologize for the 30 minutes. And colleagues, we apologize to you because you were patient and rushed to that site, only to find that technology is saying, no way, Taba, you are mad. Can we take two questions here and then two questions online, and then from there we'll go out just to stretch our legs, and then we will do the final topic. Two questions? Okay.
Good afternoon. Hello.
My name is Emmanuel from Zambia, and I think my question is on technology. Is it technology push and market pull? How have you the dynamics been for as a university? Have you had more of the technology pushing your research, or it's an issue of the market demanding what you should do the research on?
Okay, thank you. So typically, our research at the university is governed by the funding we receive. And most often, that funding we receive is not aligned with the industry need. So we might have wonderful technology, say in AI, but the market is not ready for that. And that was because our funding at that specific time was for that. But more and more, with the evolving of university industry engagement, we start introducing our academics to industry at a much earlier stage. So they can write their funding applications according to what the market need is. Before it was technology push, now it's market pull. So it is evolving, but traditionally it was always basically your technology push based on the funding that the university got. I hope that answers your question.
Good afternoon. Mine is a quick one. Is it possible to share the contacts like you've said? I would like to engage with Mr. Gerard. I've sent you a LinkedIn message, if possible, if you can reply. My interest is on what you discussed about blockchain. My master's project was on blockchain tracking data provenance. So since this discussion is about collaboration, if possible, if we can discuss any collaboration, especially for my PhD. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm open to that, and I'll respond on your LinkedIn reply.
Okay, thank you. My name is Eunice from Uganda. In regards to the presentations, I think I had a number of issues, contribution and all that. One is, I think one of the biggest challenge I would think in line with commercialization would be the idea of mindset change. Because from the discussion you've taken us through, I see you're interested in funding, but the students are interested in passing the exam and the research. How do you look at? Do you have programs that just specialize in that? Do you have a program of starting to mentor somebody from at least a lower route, not from the university, where their minds are just towards, okay, I want to finish my master's, I want to finish my PhD. Are you people looking at it from that angle, or are there programs? That's my...
Thank you. So very good question. So traditionally, it was always about a student graduating during the publications, and very little focus on entrepreneurship development. And we're very fortunate at our university that our manager, top management, has put entrepreneurship high on their priority list. And with entrepreneurship development comes IP protection and commercialization. So now what they're starting to introduce is programs within the curriculum to start working with these young minds on entrepreneurship and you know, not only but business development, to give them more of an opportunity and a broad overview of not just being a scientist or an academic. But in saying so, our Launch Lab provides incubation program for student entrepreneurs. So I'm a student. I've started my own catering business, and I need support. I can go into the programs within the Launch Lab. So, yes, we have started creating these opportunities within the university, but we are still a long way from getting it perfect.
Thank you, Nolene. Do we have anybody online? Okay. What are clear challenges your university faced while pursuing innovation, and how did you overcome them? That's you, Nolene.
Sure, we had many challenges. The barrier of
getting over just being a teaching and learning institute and producing graduates was very difficult. And how we overcome it was by effectively putting processes and procedures, and unfortunately the university is a place where they follow policy. So introducing policy, like our IPR Act, basically governs how we should manage the intellectual property, incentivizing researchers to commercialize their technology also helped. Where, you know, once approving that we can license the technology and showing them how the researcher then benefits from that licensing through the royalties that they earn helped. Starting our incubator and starting our own spin-out companies and showing the academics that you can commercialize your own technology through your own startup with access to funding, access to support network, and that is a key factor that the universities need to provide to their staff. They need to give them access to these enablers like funding, like mentorship, putting them into programs that can help them, sending them for a marketing course that helps them be less technical, has helped significantly. So it is a continuous process, but it is a working process.
Thank you, Noreen. Another question online. What are the differences between venture capital and venture builder?
Well, in South Africa, venture capital funding is like equity funding in the U.S. So venture capital, venture builder, one would provide you with access to funding. One would provide you with access to opportunities. They will provide you with enabling services that will not necessarily be money, but has the same value as giving a startup money. You know, sometimes you need that venture builder that comes there and teaches a researcher or a student what it is to start a business. I have an idea. Is it a business? Taking them to that process, helping them understand what's key into commercializing that technology is very important. Whereas a venture funder will do a due diligence, fund the technology with clear rules, like they would take equity in the company or something like that structure, and push the commercialization, driving it through funding, but the team has to take more of the responsibility.
Thanks, Noreen. Harald, you want to pitch in as well?
Just say again?
On the venture capital, venture builder, you want to say something as well? Or you okay?
I think Noreen summed it up very well. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
May I just ask the last question?
Sajjad?
Yeah. May I ask the last question?
Yes, you can ask.
All right. That is indeed my question. Just need to be a little more clarified. Patent value funds can be set up as a special purpose entity which collects inventors' money from the capital market, and this money is then invested in younger technologies. In this mechanism, the technology ownership is assigned to the founder. To what extent do you think such mechanism will alleviate the concerns between technology, between industry and academia?
Harold, do you want to go?
Or is it a helpful one?
Just say again, Oli.
Do you want to go, or do you want me to give this one a go?
Yeah, it's quite a difficult question in terms of the IP stuff, and maybe you can tackle and I'll fill in
okay, perfect.
From the industry side.
So typically at the university, we like to bundle our IP package to include the intellectual property, protected intellectual property, as well as know-how. And often in a university, we work with very, very early stage technology. We file the patent so early, before the technology development can be done, because the academic has an academic agenda, they need to publish and or they need to present at a conference. And by packaging the know-how with the IP, it helps us extend the life of the patent. So very often we would look at ways to structure this. For the period of the patent, we might have a higher royalty. Once the patent expires and you just have the know-how, the royalty rate will reduce. But very often, why we add the know-how is because industry actually wants access to the university's know-how. They want access to the research. They want access to the researchers. And with this continued know-how in the license, we are continuously engaging with the industry partner who has taken the license and taken our technologies further. I mean, I would use an example of our pharmaceutical licenses where the patents have expired and within 2 years of commercialization, after 2 years of having a product in the market, we don't have a patent because that's how long pharmaceutical takes to get to market. But what we still have is our active know-how. We also have trademarks. It's very important that you consider filing trademarks when you know that you have a technology that you want to bundle in an IP package. I hope that helps.
You want to come in, Harat?
No, I think maybe just from an industry perspective, it is quite important for us to collaborate with universities when it comes to IP. I think what we've done in the past is to almost put certain milestones to the business to see how, over a period of time, we can actually buy out the IP from the university as such. That doesn't happen often, but I think we from industry are investing in those businesses. We open up doors for them in the sector, and once they hit certain milestones, we don't want IP ownership to hold them back if there is big venture businesses or venture capital providers who want to come in. And I think it's always about negotiating with academia and universities on how to find the sweet spot.
Thanks, Gerard. I think that one on agreement, will you just answer in one? How is the agreement like when the innovation is for students?
Okay, so if it's a student venture that wants the university intellectual property, we will still follow the same process as licensing the technology as we would do to any company. But we also try to be more lenient. So we would come to NIPMO and ask them to give us a grace period for the student where we will have a royalty-free period, maybe for the first 2 years, helping them establish themselves in the market. We also then would not put a significantly high royalty rate. We will look at what it's market-related and go lower than that. Because we want to enable the student. We want to enable that company, and we want to create more jobs through that.
Thank you so much. We'll continue.
No, and I'm just saying that's just our university model.
Okay. Colleagues, they said they're okay.
Hello. Okay. Again.
Our colleague from Zambia will kill me because I thought I'm done. Yeah. That's the last one, please.
It's a brief one. I just want to ask, how can universities maybe find a balance optimized in producing masters which have market value, perhaps, instead of just pushing out research for the sake of pushing out research?
So that's a very interesting question, and that's something that I have been working a lot with the researchers at the university on, is making sure that postgraduate studies are actually working on innovative technologies. And it's really difficult. So you would get fields like health sciences, where they would just want to, you know, it's not necessarily creating new innovation, but building further on HIV drug discovery, where there's no new innovations, you're just improving. But if you look at engineering, data science, they are continuously evolving. And what I've seen happening more and more with the postgraduate research at the university, we're engaging more and more with industry. So we would, from the onset, the researchers will go and have a conversation with industry partners in that field and find out what's their pain. And they will work on a master's or PhD project to solve that pain. It might not be creating new IP, but it's developing IP that can be commercialized. A lot of the IP that I've seen now that's being commercialized is more in the software, AI, digital space. And that's a lot of it has to do with source code and know-how.
Hello. Mine is just a quick one. I think it's an addition to the previous question that was asked. It's on IP policy in terms of ownership. How do you ensure the researchers' project is profitable even for them to ensure that they can still maybe help make it sustainable in the long run than them just having to maybe finish their research and get a job?
So that's a difficult one. You can't have every researcher through the commercialization process, but you offer the support to all researchers. And often we would tell them, before you can start a project, come to us and tell us what the topic is. And we will sit down with them and try to make it in a more innovative way. And encourage them to go through that route. So also what's very important that we've established is our own funding. Our office has created funding opportunities for research in a postgraduate level that can help the researchers develop that to a stage. Well, it's never to a stage where you can commercialize it, but at a stage where you can license it to industry for commercialization. So you look for the researchers that want that help and support, and then you work with them and build a relationship with them and help them through that journey. And creating an ecosystem that helps, like the launch lab that we have and our own funding, helps incredibly.
Can I stop Nolene and Harad? Okay, yes. Thank you very much, Nolene. That was a wonderful presentation. What do you think, colleagues? Can you clap for them? Thank you so much, Nolene, for coming in. Harad, thank you very much for being there as well. We really appreciate. The only thing that I can say is next year, we definitely are going to give it 2 hours because we realize 1 hour is too short. Colleagues, thank you very much for being a good audience. On behalf of the organizer, together with our participants, thank you very much for being here today. We look forward to having you next year. Harad, you're missing out. I told you, next year you must come physically here. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Bye, everybody.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want to take a picture? Yes. We can just come up. Great.
Thank you.
So, colleagues, what you're going to do, we're just giving you 5 minutes to stretch your legs. Then our panel is here. The three panelists are here. We'll start in the next 5 minutes while we just prepare for them to sit properly.
This is an MUT Radio podcast.